Hi everyone, welcome back to another week here at Romance in Color.
Hi guys, welcome back and welcome back.
Yes, I hope you all had a lovely, lovely past couple weeks. I know I have been struggling, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, you were really busy this week. I know you even had to take a little step back from social media a little because you were really immersed in your work and stuff. How's that going? How's everything going?
It's going okay. On top of that, I was having some health things happen, but hopefully, I think I've gotten a handle on it. But otherwise, it's good. Plus, our birthday's coming up, and I'm kind of in the
Yeah,
funk.
they are.
But I'm trying to get
Yeah.
out of the funk. But
Yeah.
I've
Yeah.
decided. And you remember last time I said I wasn't going to do anything, but
Has
this
that
time I
changed?
decided. Yeah, I decided I'm going to
Oh.
go to the Korean spa all day and just enjoy myself.
I love that. I love that. That's
So
really,
that's
really
what I'm
good thing.
doing, editing, trying to keep my mind together, and that's it. What about you? How's your week?
So yeah, my week is okay. The weather is finally breaking in New York. Today I think was officially the first day of spring. So it was a little cooler today, oddly, but otherwise it had just been much nicer. And it really is just so amazing. I feel like what the spring and the warm weather does for your mood. And I don't know if you experience that because you live
Oh
in
yeah, I
Atlanta
do.
where you guys don't get the harshest of winters, but you get a cold season, unlike I
Definitely
guess
get
my
cold
sister in
weather.
Cali. It can get cold. Okay. So yeah, I feel like they're really, that whole seasonal affective disorder is a real thing. And I just feel like when it's brighter outside, brighter into the evening, warmer, it just makes me feel happy and a little bit of fog lifts and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, other than that, just, chaperoning the kids around here and there for their little things. And like you said, our birthdays are coming up, and I don't have anything, special plans too much either. The day after my birthday, I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but Sibo has her little
Yeah,
stand-up comedy
you
thing.
mentioned the
Yeah, so
stand-up
she's gonna do
comedy.
that. Yeah, well, I'm so nervous for her, honestly.
I hope you get some video.
Yeah, I'll try to get some footage if I'm allowed to bring my camera out. I don't know if they'll want us to, but I'll definitely try or whatever. But yeah, so that's about it. The big 4-5 is coming up for us, and so
Ugh.
you have more plans than me, really, because I'm not the thing I'm doing for my sister. That's just to support her and to enjoy her, but that's not really a birthday thing. I'm taking
Yeah.
off a day or two at work. To be honest,
Oh,
that's not
nice.
something I usually do. I've always thought that was kind of like, I don't want to say ghetto, but like when people take off the week or what, I never did that. And now I'm like, that's so judgmental. I turn my nose up to it. I'm taking off the day. My birthday, I
You
think, is on a
absolutely should.
Thursday. I'm gonna take off that Thursday and that Friday. I'll probably get my toenails done, a little pedicure, my hair wash, just something that these things seem simple, but I really don't usually do those things for me. So I said, this
Wow.
is the year that I start doing more things for me and taking care of me first instead of everybody around me. As women, we tend to do that. So
Good for
this
you.
year 45 will be the year of just me and stuff like that. Feels
Good for
good. My
you.
divorce will finally be official soon, very
Oh,
soon. I know it's been a long time coming. We've just been
I
separated. It's been years, and I'm not even gonna get into the reasons. They're not because of me, but anyway. So yeah, I just feel really good about that.
Oh,
2024 is
good.
really shaping up in a positive way. Yeah, so that's
Awesome.
my recap.
Awesome. You had a lot going on, girl. So last time we were on the podcast, we had Krista Tomlinson on. She talked about male-male romances that she writes. And it was a really interesting conversation with her. We also did some recaps of some hot topics. And I also talked about my deep dive into my Beverly Jenkins rereads for the year. Yakini, are there any hot topics this week going on? I know one thing out of the NAACP, I saw your girl Megan Good on the carpet saying she was in love, very much in love with Jonathan Majors.
Did oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I hallucinated for a second. I thought you said Megan Thee Stallion. And I was like, what? But yes, Megan Good. Well, that you're talking about that awkward red carpet moment where they turned their heads to kiss and they missed each other's mouth, and it was this talk awkward thing where he looked at the camera lady and said, "We're in love," or something, and Megan was kind of like, "Yeah." It just I the comments I see online are, "When is this script gonna end? When is this gonna be over, this charade?" I see this woman Faith came forward with some official charges she wants to press, and it's
Oh my
just a
God.
mess. It's just a mess. He might need to retain Megan's services for a little longer because he probably thought things were winding down. And now here come Faith. I think that's her name. So, yeah, I'm just, they're a mess, the two of them. I just wish Megan wasn't involved in it. Because, you know, Megan's always been our sweetheart in our community.
And she's usually been pretty low-key. I mean, she's low-key,
non-problematic. Like, really low-key. Unpopular opinion. I actually like the pastor for her. I feel too. Like, you know, she didn't have the support of the church and they were hating on her. But I feel like from what I saw, he was very much, defending her and coming, you know, really kind of telling them, don't judge my wife. And, you know, she's a strong woman. She's a woman of God and don't judge her based on how she dresses. And I like that. I don't feel like he came off preachy or I don't know what he was behind the scenes. And obviously they're not together. So maybe it wasn't that, but at least publicly he had her back. And I think that's important to show that public unit. What's it called? Solidarity, I guess. Mm-hmm. So yeah, because I guess, I don't know how at the time I was kind of like, oh, okay, they went their separate ways. But now with Jonathan Majors, I'm like, he looking just so much more attractive. Like, God, dog. But anyway.
I don't think Jonathan Majors, unpopular opinion, I don't think he's ugly.
No, right.
Ugly, and I think right, when I say and I think they have to do with featureism and whatever. And
well, people are fickle because when he was like, this, you know, A-lister, the next guy, you know, he was almost like Hollywood's next, you know, that guy. Mm-hmm. And people were like swearing up and down he was fine. I always thought he was all right. Whether when he was loved by everyone and now that he's kind of people looking at him with the side eye. So that hasn't changed to me. And he's not ugly. I don't like people talking about his features or his small head or whatever. That has nothing to do with anything. No. Is his head small? I don't know.
I don't think his head is small. I just think his features are wide.
Like he has African features, and that's fine. Yeah. Would you rather have a big head over a small head?
I don't know.
Have a small head. I don't know. Anyway, he has bigger fish to fry than I guess was worrying about the size of his head. He has to figure out his life and his next steps because it's like, in spite of whatever happens next, his career is probably never going to reach the heights that it would have. So
yeah, he's going to recover.
Yeah. And Megan Good didn't work out for him the way I guess he thought it would. Mm. Neither is having calling paparazzi while you go break up fights on the playground or whatever.
That was so weird. That was so weird.
Anyway. Oh gosh. So anyway, moving on. So that certainly was one hot topic, that red carpet moment. So we have Drea Michelle, who used to be on Basketball Wives LA. Mm. She was on there for several seasons, and that's kind of how most people know her. Yeah. And then she had launched her Mint Swim collection, which was very successful. And I've always liked Drea. Most recent, and she continued even after Basketball Wives. She always, you know, dated the celebrity guys, the sports guys, you know, the guys in the limelight. You know, I guess she's accustomed to a certain lifestyle and things like that. And it's hard to maybe go back to, quote, normal men with normal incomes. But most recently, you know, she made the headlines. Drea, by the way, is 39 years old. And she announced a pregnancy with her Houston Rockets boyfriend, Jalen Green. He's 22 years old. What is that? An age difference of, is it 17 years? I'm doing the math in my head. About 17 years, you know, which isn't so unusual for a lot of these celebrity men. They like to date women who are much younger, 17 years, 20 years plus. You know, the problem, I guess, that people were a little thinking this is cringe is because, you know, so Drea, again, she's 39. So she has a son named Nico, who is 22. And she has a son named Drew, who's 7. So she has a 22 and a 7-year-old. And so her older son, Nico, is the same age as this man that she's now pregnant by. So I think like that's kind of what gave people the ick a little. Because it's almost like, for me, with having two boys, and they're still young, they're 13 and 15, but they're getting taller and looking older. So it just reminds me, like, in a few years, they'll be 17, 18. It makes it very hard for me to, when young boys kind of look at me and approach me, it feels very cringe because it feels like they're close to my age. Like, to me, if you're, like, 25 and under, actually 27 and under, I feel like you could be my son because I'm 45 now. You really could be my son. And I don't know how she does it. I don't know how you can lay up with a 22-year-old and your son is 22. So that's my only thing. It's not judgment about an age difference or whatever. It's just that it's eerie.
I think.
So yeah, she got a lot of flack. What were you?
Yeah, I hear that. I hear you saying what men doing it and stuff like that. However, I feel like, and it's a terrible double standard.
Yeah,
but it's just to me, she feels predatory only because
story. And then getting pregnant and all this, it's like
that's what I'm saying. Getting
Drea.
pregnant, it's one thing to date the dude and go out with,
Drea,
have a little fun,
yeah.
but getting pregnant means
I
you got
just
your
feel
hooks in
sorry
the
for this
boy.
man, for this for Jalen. Because I'm like, your life is just starting. Now you tied to Drea for life and you're gonna pay child support. We don't know what his career is gonna end up being. Like, he's still very new in the league. Everyone does not have the career that, you know, the names that you've heard of. It's because they were Hall of Famers and had long. So you could be like Malaysia Pargo from Basketball Wife and her husband Gennaro Pargo, who played and now he's doing some humdrum job, not making a lot,
Right.
not giving her child support if you watch Bold and Bougie.
Right.
So this guy, Jalen, is just caught up now. Like, to me, 22, I don't want my boys having kids, or if I had daughters at 22. At 22, you're still a baby. I don't
You're
even want
still
you thinking about
learning.
marriage and children until you're about 30. So for that reason, and I'm sure that probably Drea wouldn't want her son Nico to be thinking about marriage and children at 22. So I'm not saying she trapped him, because it certainly takes two to tango. And
It
he certainly
does.
could have been like, let's use this condom or whatever. And I have a feeling he probably didn't. So for sure, they're both kind of at fault. But I'm just disappointed in Jalen. I'm sure his mom is pissed. And
You know
yeah,
too.
I'm
You know
sure, because it's
too.
like you just got in the NBA and you have a good contract. And now you done got this woman who could be your mother pregnant now. Jalen, he should be a
But he,
cautionary tale.
I
If
mean,
I don't what I don't like is people dogging out her and talking about she's old and she's like, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman. She looks she's a
great.
very youthful looking 39. So let's not do the whole hate train, like how they love to call Bernice Burgos grandma and hate on. Like, she looks good. It's not taking away from that. It's just that I feel like this young man's life is now forever changed. I'm not happy about that. I like people to live their life and be young.
Yeah,
I don't like
he
it.
doesn't have a chance to like really get out there and
Yeah.
literally sow his oats if he wanted to and
Yeah.
like
So his
have
oath, which
different
is
experiences
22.
and stuff. Like
Sure.
he's fresh in the league. He got a big check.
Yeah.
She saw that.
Yeah.
And you know, she is the older person here. She's the
Yeah.
person that should have been, you know, responsible. Because a young boy,
Yeah.
if it's wet and warm, he gonna go up in there. You know what I'm
And
saying?
they say at 22, your brain's not even fully developed if you believe
Ain't
that theory. He still has three
fully
more years. So it
developed
does
yet.
feel
Ain't fully
predatory.
shit. Ain't
It
fully
does feel
developed yet at
predatory.
all.
I don't like it. And I like
Oh,
Drea,
yeah.
but I didn't like this. I didn't like this at all. But anyway, I do wish her a healthy pregnancy or whatever. I'm curious what her son Nico thinks about it.
He has to be
Anyway.
mad. He has got to be
Yeah.
pissed.
Yeah. It's pretty gross. Anyway, in other news, basketball players. So Gilbert Arenas, he recently was doing a podcast with his homie, and I just thought this was actually funny. It made me laugh, but then I stopped laughing when I saw all the comments and the hate. So basically, I don't know if you saw this, but he was reacting to a video of Saucy Santana twerking. And I don't know if you've ever seen a Saucy Santana twerk video, but the boy can twerk.
Oh
He
yeah,
really
he
can. He
does.
can move that BBL. And he'd be
Oh
getting
yeah,
low, and he
he
just
can
is such a
dunk.
good twerker. It's just very enjoyable and entertaining. He's a good dancer overall, not just
Yeah,
twerking. Like, if you
a
ever
good
seen him in performance,
entertainer.
yeah, he's a big boy, but he's got stamina. He's in shape. He's athletic, light on his feet. He'd be doing the heel toe and all the moves and twerking, and he's just a really good dancer. So anyway, Gilbert was commenting to his boy. He was kind of like joking around, but he was like, honestly, he said he had stumbled upon a video of Saucy twerking or whatever. And he was like, look, if you look at Megan twerking, and we know Meg Thee Stallion has the knees and get low. He was like, if you look at Meg and you look at Saucy, he was like, they can both move, they can both twerk. So he was kind of joking around, like, if I had to rate which one, I don't know who was better. He was like, honestly, if I was at a strip club, not he, I don't know if he said strip club. If I was at a club and I had to throw my money at one of them, they both entertained me and it was just funny and good to watch both of them. It was cool. And to me, he was saying it as a man who's just extremely comfortable in himself, who could look
Yeah,
at
and
dancing and
it's like a
just be like,
wholesome
the boy can
comment.
move. I don't know who could. He was holding his own next to like a Meg Thee Stallion. Of course, the comments went crazy. Bro, there's no coming back from that. You know, all the comments and basically
It's
accusing him of being on the
homophobia.
down low and call, you know, I just felt like it's a man who's very comfortable with himself who can say that. And we need more of that. But
Yeah, we
the
do.
comments just went in. They went in calling him everything but a child of God. And dude's like, I'll never look at you the same, bro. Say, and it was sexy, and I wanted to slap that ass. It was like, you know, it was like he could move. It was entertaining. I've heard Charlamagne the God say that, like when he stumbled upon his Saucy video, he was like enthralled and couldn't tear his eyes away because it was like crazy. He's like a big, thick guy who can move, and it looks like
Yeah, Saucy can go. He can
he
go.
can go. And it's like, really, I just think it's unfair that women, we can comment on another woman and no one kind of like looks at you like, oh, what's going on with you? And a guy can't say. So now Gilbert Arenas done got himself canceled in like the black hetero community. You know, he's a former basketball player or whatever.
Right.
I think he's the children's father of Laura Govan, for anybody who watched Basketball Wives LA, that now that I think about
Oh,
it.
really?
But yeah,
Oh,
that
really?
was just a mess. Just to see the comments, I could had to stop reading them because that always just makes me so angry, the way people just, you know, just were
Project
going at
their own insecurities on other people.
absolutely. Like, he can't say anything. It wasn't anything like being attracted to Saucy, thinking Saucy fine or romantic feelings. It was more like, damn, he was moving. He was
Right.
getting it. Y'all say Megan has the knees. He was really going low, and it was, but anyway, so I just found that to be interesting. And then finally, Rotimi, Mr. Nigerian Butterscotch. So I don't know if you had a chance to see the video that he posted. It was today.
Oh
And
my God.
anyway, basically, you'll take a look after this because it's so cringe. I don't know if there's this trend where guys, and I don't know if women do it, but guys kind of post a video. It's sometimes in like, it's usually in slow motion, and they're doing something simple like walking or whatever. And they'll say something like, you know, if you saw me, like, what would you do or what would you
Oh
say? Like,
yeah.
remember that young man who went viral and he was dancing
Is
and
he in
stuff because he
his
was walking in?
role?
They called him the JCPenney guy or something.
Oh yeah.
And he did that video of himself. If you saw me walk by, like, what would you say? And people like went in. And it was just like nothing. But you really set yourself up when you post that kind of video. But anyway, so Mr. Nigerian Butterscotch, who we know as Andre from
Power.
Power, and he also had like a very successful song on the radio. So I forgot what it was called, but he has like a little music career. He can sing. Anyway, so Rotimi basically got roasted after he was doing some thirst trapping on the gram. And if you ask me, he deserved it. So basically, it was in a video and he's wearing a bathrobe. It's open at the chest.
I see
And
it. I'm looking at it now.
he's like standing in front of a pool with like little sexy music. And it says, if you saw me like this, what's your first thought or your first question for me? This was his caption. If you saw me like this, what would be your first thought? And so I don't know what reaction he expected, but the comments went in on him. Like, he has a beautiful wife who he married in 2020, Vanessa. She's stunning. She's absolutely gorgeous. They welcomed their son in 2021 and a daughter in 2023. So for him to post this thirst trapping video, it's corny and goofy to me, even if you're not married with kids. But if you are, it's even more like, what are you doing? Like, what is you doing, son? To say, like, why? It was just so gross. And so anyway, people went and it was not the reaction I'm sure he was expecting. And then here come Rotimi in the comments. Just for argument's sake, who do you think recorded the video with the laughing emojis? Okay, guess what? So maybe your wife recorded it, probably because you gaslit her into thinking, this is what my
Exactly.
fans want. This is what the ladies want. Trust me, this is going to help my career. You know, the kind of men who's like not
Yeah.
wanting to advertise that they're married, even though they are.
You're right.
So tacky. And it's like contrasting with, like, I just randomly saw right before this, I was on Facebook and it was a video of Lorenz Tate walking off the elevator in this blue suit, just looking so handsome and so dapper, not needing to thirst trap. You know, we love him because, you know, he's handsome and he's effortlessly just so suave and gorgeous. He doesn't need to do all that in a bathrobe, open, coming out the pool, talking about, if you saw me like this, what would you do? That just, Rotimi, do better.
Or
Do better,
I
Rotimi.
think about Idris Elba. His wife actually posted a video talking about, ladies and gentlemen, our husbands. And then she posted a video of him,
Cute.
a
That's
video of him
cute.
walking and stuff. And I was like, okay, that's cute.
That's how you kind of troll along with the ladies who love your man, and it's cute. But Idris is not doing all extra stuff,
He
you
wasn't.
know,
He was
greasing
just
up
walking
his
our streets.
body. Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? It's like
Yeah.
she could be good humored about it, and I appreciate
Very
that.
much.
Because I was just watching a video about it was with my crush, Lamon Rucker, and him and his wife, and they were on this show with Egypt and her husband, Egypt Sherrod and her husband. And she was also just talking about, you know, it just comes with the territory, being married to a Hollywood dude who's very handsome and attractive. And, you know, she talked about how it took, you know, some years and she had to grow her confidence, but she knows it's all about her and stuff like that. So I do appreciate that when a wife is very secure in herself, because you do have all women of all ages throwing their panties and stuff like that. So I get it. So maybe Rotimi's wife did take the video. But I just still thought it was very tacky, and what was the point? If you, when you ask that question, if you saw me like this, what would you say? I feel like you deserve everything that you get after that. You deserve every single bit of roasting that you're gonna get. Don't do that. Don't do that, gentlemen. Don't do it. We don't like it.
You don't see Method Man doing no shit like that.
Exactly. It's like he doesn't need to. Like, come on.
I'm
Method
sure his
Man.
wife got a fight every fucking day. She probably got a
Sure.
fight
Oh my
every day.
goodness.
Ooh, child.
Of
I'd be
course.
so stressed out. I'd be like, oh
Oh
God.
jeez, because Method Man is one of those who just got so better with age. Like
Better
LL
with
Cool J
age.
still looks good, but LL's face has that tight Botoxy look and
Yes.
fillers. Like he still
Yes.
looks good, but by the time he's Smokey Robinson's age, he's gonna look like Smokey Robinson because he has so much stuff done to his face. Whereas Method just looks so effortlessly gorgeous and oh, so handsome and natural. Yeah.
But I can't
Anyway,
imagine
child.
having to fight these women off my husband every single time.
Man, oh
Oh
man.
God, I'd be so tired.
And hopefully he doesn't succumb to it. You know, like I know some celebrity men who's still married, they've succumbed to the, like, you know, like Snoop Dogg. I know he's stepped out so many times. Remember to the point where his wife almost divorced him or was going to divorce him and then they somehow figured it out. But, you know.
Then Corinne Steffens talk about Method Man. She said that was like the best sex she ever had or something.
While he was married or
I don't
no?
know if he was still married then, but
Man,
it,
the
I don't know
best
if he was
sex.
married or
She said
what
it was the
condition.
best she ever had. Did she get into the details of why, I wonder? God, dog.
Does she need to, girl? I
I'm
mean,
just, no,
like.
because that could mean so many things. Was it stamina? Did he last a long time? Was he well endowed and he knew how to use it? Was
I'm gonna
he
have to go
mad
back and read.
creative,
I'm gonna
doing
have to go
mad
back
for
and
position?
read the book.
Yeah,
But
because
she
there's a lot of
said,
reasons why somebody could be the best you ever had. You know what I'm
"Yes,
saying? Did he
yes,
take
yes,
his
yes,
time? Did he
yes."
last a long time? I could go on and on. Maybe doing moves and tricks and stunts. Mercy. Yeah, you circle back if you go back and find out and stuff
Okay,
like
I'll come back and report and let you
that.
know.
You
I'll come back and let you know.
that. You do
Oh
that. Gosh.
man.
Anywho, that's about it in Hot Topics for the week and stuff like that.
Okay, you guys. We'll be back from the short break with an interview with Eden Apiakubi. I talked to her about her newest book, Her Own Happiness, which is one of my favorite books of 2024 that I read. And we talk about her process, her writing process, how she got started, and what her next book will be, and why she loved Jane Austen so much. So, all right, you guys. Come right back after the break. Hi everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Romance and Color. I am here with author Eden Apiakubi. Did I say that right?
Stellar, yes. That's
Yes.
just how I say it.
Eden Apiakubi. And we are going to talk about her career as a writer and her latest work, which is Her Own Happiness. So, Eden, thank you for joining us here on Romance and Color. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you so much. Thank you for coming on. So I usually ask people the question when they first come on is, when did you fall in love with romance?
So I get asked this question a lot, and I feel like I have a different answer every time. I think the most accurate thing is to say I fell in love with romance through fan fiction first. So, I didn't have, my mom didn't have, her Sacha Harlequins in the house. But I was a teenager in the mid earliest days of the internet, and I was an X-Files fan. And I remember when I was in high school, and I had a friend who printed out X-Files fan fiction of
Oh,
a
wow.
romantic variety. And I was like, this is great. And so I feel like that is what prepared me for the world of romance. I didn't really have a huge urge to read romance though until sort of the new dawn, well, newer to me of contemporary romance featuring Black women. I'm so late to, I was so late to the party on, I know about Christina T. Jones now and other folks, but Jasmine Guillory was, I would say, the first romance I read that I'll put it that read that I enjoyed. I tried to read Redeeming Love. What's this being Miles and Peace Corps that was being passed around, and it's a Christian romance that involves the heroine getting beat up for her first three chapters. I can't hang. I'm a squishy ball. So this is just sort of like she's a lawyer and she, they meet in an elevator and I'm claustrophobic, so I was with her being trapped in the elevator. And just the sparks and the fizz and yeah, so I think that was the first one I loved. And that is what got me into the genre, which is sort of at a perfect time.
So tell us about Eden. Who is Eden? I know out for a little bit from your bio, that you're born in DC, you're raised in Maryland. And so what made you transition from, being a romance reader to being a romance writer and saying that you want to write romance?
Well, it's sort of fun. I have been a writer of some kind my entire life. When I was in third grade, I guess I've been writing retellings my whole career, quote, quotation marks. We had a writing competition in my county called Write a Book, and you got to physically write a book like you wrote on the pages. And I had a friend who was my illustrator. And covered everything in with marker, and we made our cover with cardboard, and we got to enter into the contest. And I was retelling of Sleeping Beauty, in which Aurora became a opened her own catering business at the end. That was, my feminist thing. It's like she's a businesswoman. And so I was just always writing here and there. Got to think that I wanted to go into journalism. And then, went to college, minor in communications, graduated in early 2000s, which, if you remember the early 2000s at all, it was a lot, great time for blogging and other sorts of things, but a horrible time to try and become a traditional journalist.
Oh,
So,
yes, absolutely.
as those dreams and goals collapsed like a fly in the cupboard, I decided I'm doing something else. I had some unhappy internships and a really not great job. I was working at a small newspaper making for $30 and for 3 hours a week. $30. I would have stayed there for $30 an hour, but for 3 hours a week making minimum wage, working on a newspaper. And I was just sort of like, I don't want to climb whatever ladder this is to get to a career that may no longer exist. And so I decided I'm going to go to the Peace Corps. And so while I'm applying, I decided I'm having the urban life I've always wanted. I moved into a group house at a rent impossible to conceive of today in DC. And I started working for a really great local indie bookstore in our area called Politics and Prose. And because I wanted to hang with people my own age again, I joined a writing group and I just needed something to write, and so I started writing. I tried to write YA, and it was going. I still like the idea of that book name. Maybe I'll come back to it, but the writing groups were structured so that you had a little short writing exercise at the beginning, and then people got critiqued for a second half after a dinner break, which was the main reason we all went, because whoever hosted had to serve dinner. And so we were all in our 20s and wanted to eat not at our house. So one fateful evening, the prompt was to rewrite a famous scene from literature. And I had never had lightning strike me so fast to just write, we're doing Pride and Prejudice, we're rewriting the proposal scene, it's gonna be an Asian American, and my it was always an Asian American man, always a black woman who was an RA. He was at that time he was the coolest thing on their Massachusetts campus, which was in the a cappella group, and she hated a cappella. So and like hit me again, like I said, like lightning. And that was the start of the Bennett Woman, and I wanted to pursue it. I knew I wanted it to be a love story. I knew I wanted, I was certain that I wanted to have my dark-skinned black heroine fall in love and be treasured. And I couldn't, I was like, it's they're in their 20s, so it can't end in marriage or anything. And so I was like, okay, I guess this is women's fiction. I didn't think about genre. I was like, let me try and finish a novel. And so kept going, took it to Peace Corps, brought it back, wanted to make friends again in 2011, joined a new writing group, kept going until I was on maternity leave. And that's I finished, I got, I finished through my critique group while like right before I went on maternity leave, edited through maternity leave because I needed a hobby. And then I would say what brought me into the world of romance was a cool friend I met on the train. So when I, this is sort of a fun story. I feel like I was always destined to be in the romance world because how else does this happen? I sort of had a meet cute with an author friend. So I've taken my baby on the train now to go. We have our daycare was in town. I work in the city. And so I'm taking the commuter train because it's a little bit more, well, not more reliable, but basically it's easier to have a child and all a child accoutrement on a commuter train than it was on the metro at that time. Especially the Rhode Island was kind of a nightmare in that particular year. And when you get on a commuter train, you see the same people every day because it's about an hour happening between trains. And there's one lady who was really cool. And we get to talking, and she's like, oh, I was writing. I was with my writing group. I was like, oh, you write? I write too. And she says, like, what do you write? Oh, romance? It's like, oh, you're a romance writer. That's so cool. I think I could write romance, but I could never write a sex scene. I'd be just bad at it. Like, you don't have to write sex scenes to write romance. I was like, I don't. And she said, so what's your novel? I'm telling her it's a play on Pride and Prejudice. It's their, happy ending, romance, love and treasure. It's like, so the romance plot, the center of your story, it's like, yes. Does it have a happy ending? Yes. You're a romance writer. And that wonderful lady's name is Adele Buck. And she is now, I think she just it has her second book coming out for Harlequin quite soon called Fake Flame. And I'm in the romance genre because of her, because I don't think I would have had the guts to try on my own. I would have just thought, I'm just like a woman's fiction writer who likes happiness and romantic stories. And just because I thought that if I couldn't write sex scenes, I couldn't be in. But now I know that romance is a much wider and deeper pool than I imagined from the outside.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's not just about the sex scenes, although we do love a good sex scene over here now. But it's not always about the sex scene. Sometimes for me, the plot is way sometimes way more central. Like I've read books where it's just sex, and then there's no plot. You know, and if that's the case, it's erotica at that point. You can't even constitute that as like a romance, even an erotic romance. But sometimes the plot has to give for me. I have to have a little
I
bit of
think that
plot.
most people feel that. I think that everyone wants to, who, because there is erotica and there's different spice levels, but a romance must have, I feel like a happy ever and happily ever after is required, but you
Well,
have to
of
have the
course.
longing. You have to have like the spark. You have to have the spark on the page, and you have to have and one thing I love about contemporary romance in particular is the love interest grow toward each other. So it's like, it's not just he bought a house and she learned how to bake. It's like they found the things that they needed to fix within themselves to make themselves a better partner, and then and working on them found their way back to each other. I love that part. I love that part about like of love being a force for good in your own life, and then love pushing you towards a person that you should be with.
So let's talk about these retellings. And stuff. Were you always drawn to Jane Austen and her work, or was it just something you just kind of happened upon, like because of that writing group and you did this exercise, or were you always interested in like what would Jane Austen look like if it was black?
Well, I was always a masterpiece theater girly. So I growing
Agree.
up, I love like I think I saw like the Ang Lee Sense and Sensibility at some ridiculous age. And I remember watching the first Persuasion movie on PBS. And so when I can't when I was in high school, it's like it's time to read some Austen. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then In high school, I remember being like, man, all these people do it. It's like I love the things, but I struggled with integrating the Texas bunch of high school around like I love the women together, but I couldn't get like Darcy and me were fighting like the whole my whole AP English class. And like you are just a rich, awful man. And it took some rereads for me to really get how he I thought he didn't earn it. You know, I thought he didn't grow towards her. And although Austen's not a romance writer, she writes marriage plots. It's a whole different thing. But I was hoping to see more of that growing together. But you know, doing some rereading, I was like, okay, I see it. It's not just that he has a rich house. And so I was thinking about when I was struck by lightning, how much of I would say small PWI, almost Ivy College. I pretty much based the school of my first novel on the school I went to, and how much that was like an English village, like how it had its weird hierarchies, its weird traditions, its self-importance, and it's all so small and contained that you know when they say step 50 foot out of their world, none of it matters, you know. And you know, being that 2 years out of college, where college is so familiar, but you're realizing how much of the stuff that you cared about so much didn't apply to the real world. I was just sort of like, it was, I felt like this contained system that I wanted to explore. I wanted to see, well, what is the relevance? And so I wanted to think about with my first novel, what's an accomplished woman in you know, the 21st century, when we don't have to get married to exist, you know, we can own property and things like what, like taking marriage out of it, what do we look for in a partner that we want to take seriously? What do we want that partner to look for in us? You know, how do we how, and then like, you know, every school has a every situation has their social norm. So like, what is it to be like genteel but broke in the 21st century? So to me, that was like being the child of teachers, going on scholarship to a fancy school where you can speak the language, you understand the lingo to a point, like you're cultured, but I like you may know, you know, Voltaire from Camus, but you don't know Birkin from Versace, you know? And there are some real life ex things that happened that I experienced at my fancy school that I put in the book. Like there's a whole thing. I didn't know what Burberry. Okay, again, early aughts. So you have to remember this is before Burberry was everywhere. I literally remember the first time my freshman year of college, came out on the quad. It was like the first like fall day. Like it felt like fall. You know, everyone was like, "Oh, I'm gonna do my fall thing today." So before people, you know, some people have the whole like Darth Vader, North Face. So my school didn't do that. In my school, I saw all these people breaking out their tan scarves with this weird plaid. I was like, why is everyone wearing the same basic looking tan scarf with this black and red stripe? I was like, I literally asked, were they free at Abercrombie or something? And my friend was like, it's a Burberry scarf. They're $400. They're a status symbol. And I had to sit down. I was like, are they made of gold? And I was like, but that's how, like, I was in the same place as them. I went to the same classes as them. I thought I understood a lot, but there was this wall that I couldn't climb over because that was just class-based. And I was fascinated about the idea of love triumphing over that, you know? Because there's gonna, like, love overcoming any sort of cultural clash, I think is very interesting.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So you took this Austen retelling set in a collegiate space with multicultural characters, and when you decide, hey, I'm going to try and sell this and put this out in the market, what was that experience like for you? Like trying to find an agent, trying to sell this book, trying to put it out there to to really, really sell it and make it part of the,
It was a learn. I viewed the whole thing as a learning experience because I sincerely thought When I started querying, it was 2016. Yeah, 2016. I sincerely thought that it wasn't going to happen. So I was like, I've written a novel. I will take this novel as far as it can go. It has a black heroine. It has a dark skinned black heroine. With a dark
Wow.
skinned, I describe her as thick in the novel. Not skinny black heroine. It has an Asian male lead. It has a trans B character with a love interest. And that B character is a mixed race, biracial black and white kid. My two white characters, one's villain, one is kind of an annoying young person, and they're way down the call sheet. Yeah, this isn't gonna make it to
Right.
commercial fiction. So we're just gonna see what happens. I'm gonna learn the publishing industry, you know? And for I did what most of us do. I pitched, wrote to querying, into the wind for, that great sucking hole where all the queries go, until one of them hits a fan and someone like looks at it. But when I was talking to my friend who introduced you to the world of romance, he also introduced you to a world of romance Twitter, which, again, at this time was a force, for good, actually, in the world, in that I got my agent through a Twitter competition. I got it through a diverse pit pitching contest. And the pit, I hope it still exists in some form, because I've talked to a lot of other Black BIPOC authors. A lot of us got our start in those kind of pitching contests.
I did too. I got my book through DV Pitt too. And they're still around. They're reorganizing right now. I don't know if they're gonna be on Twitter, so to speak, anymore, given the whole platform's change, and it's scoping things, but they definitely are revamping, and I think they are gonna come back soon. Yeah. So it's good
Well,
to
I
hear.
definitely want to encourage the next I feel like generation's too big to say, but the next group of writers through that process, because it was so huge for me. And I was lucky and I found the amazing Rachel Richter. I'm going to say her name every time, because she stuck with me after querying, query. I went from having one 50-page query to having a bunch of queries. And then she asked for full and asked for birthday me over like a weekend. So I went from like into the wind, into the darkness, I'm there to like, oh, someone thinks it could get published someday, and then she stuck with me for 3 years, in which I changed the entire format of the book, because I wrote it in third person omniscient, and people did not want to read that, or at least did not want to, or did not want to try and sell it. And so I changed it to a multi voice, a multi POV, third person limited. And oh my gosh, the very first version had footnotes. I did a lot of experimenting with my writing. And there was one version that was a prologue by a ghost.
Oh wow, that's totally different from the
It wasn't spooky, she was a funny ghost.
My
But yeah, I tried a whole lot of stuff. And so the last version, the one that got through, was in June. Was it May of 2020? We queried Amazon on a whim, and in August of 2020, I had a book deal.
Wow,
I
that's amazing.
was ready. It's been a full year. I was like, okay, we've done the whole thing. Michelle stuck with me. I think it. I owe it to all of us to shelve it and to move on to the next thing. And then, like, literally, I said this out loud. 2 days later, I got the call.
That's amazing. Our timing is not what always on time, you know. Our time is not always on time. So, I mean, you honestly, I think that 2020, 2019, 2022 period was a lot of Austin retellings out there, a lot of multicultural Austin retellings out there. What made yours so different than, I mean, you named a few things, but what do you think kind of drew a lot of people to your retelling versus everybody else's?
Well, I think that I had a real heavy emphasis on the friendship. I mean, my novel's called The Bad Woman, as opposed to, Eden and Will, because it started as a friendship novel. I wanted to heavily anchor in that friendship while I was still centering my black heroine. And it was, while it was still like a fluffy, happy story, I try and stay trauma free. I still tried to ground it in different kinds of realism. Like, my heroines were feminist. They talked about, the people who wouldn't listen to them because they were women, or thought they were dumber because they transitioned, for Jamie, or poor my darling Tessa, who could stand up to everyone else in the world but her boyfriend. And I really tried to have a balance of the fun and the silly and the things that like might just change your life, and that sort of period of time where you're eager to become, like, as you're leaving college and you have an idea of what the world is like, but you're also just getting to enjoy not having to care so much. So I sort of that sort of magical liminal time between like pretend adulthood
On the
and real
cusp of
adulthood.
adulthood.
I think that people kind of maybe need something like that, a little sweetness at that time. And that's something that my book offered.
And it was right in the middle of the pandemic when, a lot of young people were uncertain about their lives, what they were going to do. It kind of painted like, okay, you're not alone in this journey, like on the cusp of adulthood. You know what I mean? And the things that they went through, a lot of people went through, like you said, struggling with identity, struggling with class, struggling with, am I gonna have a job when I graduate? Am I gonna be employable? All these things, those were super, super relatable things that, were told in a very interesting format of that particular retelling. What is it about the writing process, and particularly the genre that lends to what you want to bring, like culturally, to storytelling?
Well, I think that the thing I love about romance is how flexible it is and how open it is. Romance readers are very generous. It's sort of like they know they're promised a happy ending, so they are going to strap in and just believe in you until they get there. And so I felt free to try some things that I just thought, like, okay, that's gotta move the story. So between my I should be talking more about my newest novel, Her Own Happiness, which is the one that got written during the pandemic, which, whew, well, it was its own thing. And it was my first novel that I wrote under deadline, which, if I could never do that
Girl, that's
again.
impossible.
I know, but so yeah, the struggle of going from like luxuriously writing my novel over one novel over 7 years to writing one over what became like two and a half was a whole different thing. But I realized that the most important thing, it really, writing under deadline really made me try and focus on what the story needed and not just what I wanted to put in there. And so I had to really balance the story I wanted to tell, which was one of struggle during the pandemic, and sort of the beauty in the now versus the beauty of the future with, getting something on the page. And so when things, it forced me to make decisions fast. When things weren't working, I just tossed them. When it was taking me too long to get to a scene, I just like, okay, I gave myself like 2 days, or you gotta cut the scene and think of something else. And it really helped me strip down the story to what I needed to be about, which was Maya's emotional struggles and the need for connection with her best friend and more, to be more aunt. And then how that's the self-doubt of the situation she found herself in shaped her decision making, because we often don't make the best choices when we're hurting. And I my first book, there were two sisters, and EJ, I want, it was my dark skin heroine. I wanted to give her the fairy tale. I wanted to give her everything, a hot, handsome, rich boyfriend. And for Maya, I really wanted to write about regular people in love. And I think that there's a lot of people who want to see that in romance. That's, I think it's a great thing about your book, is that they feel like people that you'd see on the, on the bus being cute, and you're like, oh, look at them, happy couple. And I wanted that. I wanted that kind of love to sustain you through the hard times kind of feeling. I wanted to create that kind of origin story for that kind of relationship, because, writing during the pandemic and, the last end of Trump and, all that we've been through, it was a really hard time to be an optimistic person.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I was trying to write with a hope I didn't have for most of the book, and I realized that a lot of people are in the same place. And so I was going like, okay, I was going to write, if I can't have it, where can I find it? Where do I look for it? And that's what I tried to put in the ways that the person who's for you is going to help you find that hope. And so and so I almost, I don't, I'm not sure if I did this on purpose. If I am a great writer, I tried to contrast the things that felt like they were good on paper or smart on paper with the things that were ultimately sustaining, and then hoping my heroine chose the one that made her, that gave her a light to her existence versus what just made sense.
That's deep. That's real deep. I think what I liked about full disclosure, I read this in probably a day, I think a day or two. And I didn't know this was a book I needed at the time. I was going through some stuff, full disclosure. I was going through a lot. And this book was so warm. That's all I was like, it
Oh,
was warm.
good.
It was warm. It felt like a hug. It just felt tender. And I think what I loved about Maya was that I love the fact that she knew she was hurting. She knew that there was this emptiness, this thing going on with her, which is why she was so ready to like give up control of a lot of her life and things to him. And not realizing that she needed to kind of make some decisions and stuff on her own. And one of those decisions being what to do about Ant and what his own feelings and things like that. And Ant, oh my God. Like, can there be a sweeter, like teddy bear of a male MC in a book? Like, I don't think so. Like, in my head, I could see him just as clear as day, in my head, what he looked like and everything. And his love for her was so apparent, and I love that you wrote about, we don't get this, we don't get the sex scenes, we don't get the, we get a kiss. I mean, I'm not gonna spoil it, but hey, there is a kiss. But we get a kiss. But I think wrapped up in that kiss is the promise and the hope of what's to come. And that's what I just loved about the book. It was tender and it's warm, and there's so much hope for what's to come, because like you say, you wrote this during the pandemic, so you wanted something hopeful, and you wanted to write something that gave people hope. I'm also curious about the decision to make or to delve into Ant's asexuality and aromanticism, which is something we also don't see a lot with people of color in books. So talk about that. Like, what made you decide to make Ant this titular character, one of these main characters, aromantic and asexual, and struggling with those things in light of him being connected to his best friend?
Well, he is a romantic. He just is He's a romantic asexual. So aromantic
Romantic
is no romantic, like just friendship, we'll call you platonic. What people say, like your St. Peter's word is like out there having fun, making connections with humanity, but not so much in love. Ant loves love. He is asexual. And it was important to me because I knew I wanted to write two fat black characters for this book. And I felt like I was sort of hearing, I was reading other books with asexual characters, and I was thinking about how, or and also again, I was moving fast, so I was trying to just research while I was reading too, and how black people are generally not represented much in the asexual world, and particularly black men, because of how hypersexualized they are, you know, in culture. And so I always try to have a bit of representation of, you know, of some kind in my books. Just, you know, there's every kind of person in the world, and they too fall in love. And so I just was like, someone out there needs to see a black male asexual character that's not a side character, you know, and see that they are capable of tenderness and desire. And but it's not like a pathetic pining thing. It's just, you know, their desire stops at a certain point because that's their orientation. And that he, once he understands himself, it's sort of trying to get the world to understand him. But but his comforts and his focus on Maya is because she understands the big things. And so and they can connect on everything else, you know? And I think for often, like whether like she's pansexual, I'm sure I didn't go much into like the biphobia that she must experience because she had so much else going on, frankly. But I feel like it's sort of a reason I this is not a critique to anyone, but and I'm also I'm married to a white man, so this shouldn't be a struggle for me. But I have an easier time writing interracial romance between two minority characters because I feel like if you have a understanding of someone's struggle, they're like they're. That's the thing that you don't have to explain, even though it can explain the layers of the struggle, but the existence of the struggle, you could like it makes the bridge to connection shorter. And so they have multiple bridges of connection that I wanted to explore within their relationship, and then just seeing them have fun and be, because they aren't they're they are not just a collection of their multiple identities. They're Aunt and Maya, and so. I wanted to also, I mean, he's the best, just because he's the best, and Maya needed the best, but also because I wanted to show that an ace partner could be not only the show have desire, but be desirable, be a great partner to someone who may be allosexual, and be like, you know, I want Ant for my book boyfriend, and so, yeah.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I've, like I said, I've not seen a character written in this way. I don't think ever. If I have, I don't remember. But you know, Ant is clearly, he just as Maya is struggling to figure out who she is career wise and things like that. I feel like Ant is very much aware of the things that he's passionate about. But at the same time, his own sort of personal passions, in terms of relationship with Maya, with, you know, trying to figure out who he is in that space of intimacy, he's still trying to figure that out. And I love that. I love that journey. I love when he reaches out, finally reaches out to the ace community that he finds on the app. The app that he talks much trash about, but he end up using it anyway. And you know, and how much community also, I think this book is also a lot about community
Oh,
and how
yes,
much
definitely.
community is necessary for healing. Community is necessary for self-discovery, because even though self-discovery is something, people make self-discovery seem like it's something that you need to be doing by yourself.
Right. Like you
And
go climb a mountain and there's
you go,
discovery at the top.
exactly. But self-discovery also comes in the form of the folks around you. For Maya, it's her interaction with M. It's her interaction with, you know, the other people that she meets in M's circle. It's her parents, it's her sister. For Ant, it's his mom, it's the, you know, his folks that he meets on his job. You know, it's the ace community that he finally reaches out to and feels like, oh my God, I'm not alone in these feelings that I have. And so I love the fact that community is thread all through this book, too. And you know, as someone who, you know, I don't have my mom with me anymore,
I'm sorry.
thank you, but I just there was just a warmth there, particularly from Maya's mom there, that you know, she recognized that her daughter was going through these things. The dad was kind of like, look, I don't know what you're doing with these people over here. Look, he was very, very skeptical. And she's like, hush, hush, just let her do her thing. Do her thing. It reminded me so much of my mom. And how she'd be like, no, let her figure it out herself. Let her figure this out. Let her find her way. Which they let her have the space, even though it was the pandemic and they were close together, they still let her have the space to just figure out how she's going to be in relationship to other people and her career and stuff like that. I loved it. I can go on and on about it, but it was one of the best reads I had for the
Oh,
show.
that means so much.
Oh,
It
absolutely.
really does.
Absolutely. I just
I think you tapped on something that I didn't realize I was doing, but like really both of their journeys are about the way that you let yourself be known. Like Atlas, like Maya was devastated because she had created this community and she didn't want to go back to being known in the way that she had been, you know, in her high school before she left, because she was the rebellious one who went away and only came back on her terms occasionally. While Ant had, you know, he had the loss of his father early in his life, and he had just carved a little niche for himself, and he didn't want he like he knew that the world was bigger and that he wanted part of a bigger world, but he had to let himself be open to like let himself, so being known and letting yourself be known is such a struggle. And you know, it's a and especially in the pandemic, it's a time where we all looked inside a lot, you know, we and whether or not we enjoyed what we saw there, we all had to look inside. And there was no place to hide from ourselves. I think it's one of the things that made it really hard. You couldn't drown out with work, you couldn't work it out with the gym or activities. You had to look at yourself in the mirror every day and figure it out. And there is something intensely painful about that, but you know, if you found what you were looking for, it's something intensely joyful. So
And even with some of the secondary characters like M, I guess in a way I saw her kind of taking Maya under her wing and, you know, doing this whole this crazy makeover and all this stuff for her as a distraction from her own problems that she's going through, right?
oh, yeah.
You know, she's going through a lot. Even though she has a successful career, she's this girl boss that we hear quite often. Girl boss. And she seemingly has it all together. She really doesn't. And she is struggling with being a caretaker for her elderly father, who's going through Alzheimer's and dementia. And you know, she's put on a brave face and trying to, you know, build herself up and build herself into a brand, and not realizing that, okay, I'm a brand, but I also need human connection, and everything is not a job. Everything is not a a project. And her, for me, I think her seeing it wasn't until a little later in the narrative that she sees Maya not just as this project, this person to take under her wing, but this is my friend. You know, and she, although she has friends, they seem very surface level to me, very surface level folk. But Maya genuinely is a person who can be a friend who didn't really want nothing from her, you know, didn't want anything from her, didn't need anything from her, really. You know, she's taking her up on the wing with the job. She's very good at helping and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, she needs Maya as much as, you know, Maya, quote unquote, needs her in their relationship. And I kind of liked the kind of discovery of M, who realizes, wow, you know, I'm not just this girl boss. I'm not just this person who has all these people around me to do things, and I'm part of the DC elites. And I kept thinking about Real Housewives of Potomac. I was thinking about Giselle. Is that you, girl? You know, Real Housewives of Potomac. But you know, I'm not part of the DC elites, and blah blah blah. You know, I am a person who has feelings, and I'm going through something. I'm struggling, and you know, I need somebody to be my friend, and really lean on. And I feel like that their relationship sort of changes from mentor mentee to just purely friendship in the end, which I like. I like. It's so many, like I said, so many layers in here.
Well, what's interesting with M is so the Her Own Happiness is based on the novel Emma, or it's
Yeah, Emma.
inspired
Yeah.
by. And what's most people don't know Emma well, but they know Clueless. So, you know,
Right.
she's Cher. And I was like, I can't, I was thinking about retelling, like, I can't do a novel about the rich girl in this economy. Like, there's just no way for me.
Right,
And like, but I have to, I can't. Like I read Emma, and I start Emma not being able to stand Emma, and then Emma not being able to stand Emma. So I was like, I can't go into this book, have see all this time with her, and not be able to stand her. I have to find her in humanity. And so, eventually, I was just sort of like, she's working so hard not to touch her own lonely.
Yes,
And
yes.
you know, she has the means, which is sometimes something. Sometimes the worst thing you can have to avoid it at all costs. You know.
Absolutely. She didn't she does the things to distract her from her own reality of what's going on with her. Is what and she was already lonely. The pandemic just makes this other level of isolation that's
Right.
just insufferable. You know what I mean? Like
I imagine her,
yeah.
and I imagine Maya being like the first person she's seen that doesn't work for her in weeks, and she's like, you seem
Yeah,
lovely.
like I love her so much. She's
Yeah.
wonderful. Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. So, more author, but just a few more author questions because I need to
Sure,
know.
sure.
How has, you know, doing DD Pit and all that and getting out here and publishing your first book, what have you learned between publishing your first book and then this book?
Well, I think that before I got into the publishing side, I didn't realize how much authors needed other authors. On the very top, because we help each other, see other where our books. It's should our publishers be doing more to promote us? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the fact that we get to form networks to encourage each other on Instagram and I met you on TikTok, which is
Yeah.
lovely, and just be in each other's lives. Because, well, I started on Instagram due to the support of my fellow APUB authors. We have a group chat, and I was so scared to be online. But once I just looked at it, it's like I get a chance to root for people. And just start, just every time I saw someone say, I published today, I got to. Say like congratulations. It became fun and less scary. And the more I invested in cheering other people on, the more I felt comfortable myself just being out here and figuring out how like my how to be in public as an author. I think that was the hardest thing at first. I was like, I was just so terrified of getting like in some sort of Twitter storm. Like, I don't type well. What if I miss a comma and I accidentally, I don't know. I know what I thought was going to happen, but like, I was so scared. But getting comfortable with social media was 100% just getting comfortable with the getting involved and connecting with the writing and author community and seeing all the beautiful people out there who just want to share their love for stories and connect with readers. And and then because the one thing that also is clear is that you have no idea what's going to happen to your book. I my first book did great. My second book, no second book does like gangbusters. So but I'm happy because I wrote the book that I needed at the time, and then my fellow authors have been. I've had the most fun this book this time around because I'm it's no longer 2021, so I can see people in person. But my connection and my publicity has all been from my outreach with to publications and to my fellow authors. I did and to people in the writing in the reading and writing community. I did an event with at the Rip Bodice in Brooklyn with Quanah Jackson and Rutabia Jarvis, or Tattletab, as she's more widely known on TikTok. And I met them on TikTok, And particularly for being Black women authors, which it's hard, unfortunately, harder to do than you hope. But in but the online community has been so beautiful. And one, figuring out just little author publishing questions, and two, getting the word out about your work because it's so hard, even with traditional backing, to make a kind of splash. And I guess the second thing I have to admit is that a beat sheet or a plot isn't the worst thing in the world. I was on deadline, so this novel got written because of romancing the beat. And
Look,
that
I my last three manuscripts have been done with Romance and the Bee. Like at first I was definitely a pantser flying by the seat of my pants type of person. Didn't really write to the beats. Now I definitely, for the most part, because I throw a screwball in there here and there somewhere in the plot. But most times I write to the beats. It's been super helpful
And that
to
was the advice of talking about DV Pitt. I got a diverse voices mentorship with Denise Williams, who was amazing. Again, talking about the support of other authors. And she's the one who put me on to Romancing the Beat. When I was like, how do I write a second book? I have nothing. She's like, you can do it, I promise. And she is so prolific and still quality. It's shocking to me how many, because she was working
That's
on
amazing.
three times. She put out three times the amount of work that I did while I was writing my one book. And I was just sort of like, I'm just gonna say it's because you have been in the game so long. Because she can write so much and it's all so good.
She's
She
awesome.
was a tremendous, and she was always supposed to help me like understand social media and sort of get acquainted, but she stuck with me through pretty much getting my first manuscript.
Oh, fine.
checking in. She was such a kind and generous, and like then she introduced me to Priscilla Olivares, who was her mentor, so she was sort of my grand mentor.
Nice.
And Priscilla was also just an encouragement, during that time where I was just like, I gotta get another money back. This book is not gonna get written. I don't know, man.
That's okay. I think they know, and the books speak for themselves, so you don't have to worry about that. I'm sure they're super proud of you. Super proud of you. So we talked a little bit about the writing process, and I know it can be solitary and long, and what does a typical writing day look like for you? And when you get kind of stuck in the weeds, what do you do to like get yourself kind of unstuck when you're writing?
A typical writing day, so I have a full I'm a librarian by day. So I have a full-time job, you're 9 to 5-ish. I have a family. And so usually writing starts for me after my kiddo goes to bed. When I was, again, this is two deadlines, so I'm still trying to find my rhythm now that I have freedom again to sort of pick my projects. But I want to say that like a good 2 hours, in that in the evening, or later, it got a little wacky towards the middle of the book, how late I was staying up. But I'm a big fan of like put something here, a TK, TKing a section to sort of like I can't figure this out, TK. This will be better later. make it future Eden's problem. And eventually future Eden does to take care of it, even if she curses past Eden for like giving her so much to do. I think, I would could say that I have a tremendously supportive spouse who will let me just gaze off into this and there to say, hey, what would you think about? And then, fully expecting him to remember the last plot twist that I, and then usually he will be like, well, I'm not sure that's very consistent with what you established about. I was like, well, fine. And also, he is lovingly honest. So if something's not working, he's like, I really don't think it's gonna work.
Yes, spouses are the silent betas, the alpha readers. So, okay, we're coming to the end of the podcast. So we're gonna do like a little quick this or that. And so I'm gonna ask you a few rapid fire questions. Give me the first answer that comes to your mind, okay?
All right, I'm ready.
Favorite book as a kid?
A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Do you like writing heroes or villains?
Heroes. I'm good at writing anti-heroes better than I am at writing villains.
Okay. I think I know this one, but love scenes or dramatic arguments?
Oh, love scenes.
Your favorite place to write.
We now have a lovely little table in our backyard, and with sunny and not too mosquito-y outside, it's the perfect place to be.
Book reviews to read or not read.
Not to read. I if you bought my book, it's not my business.
Same. I do not read reviews. I do not.
I didn't know what Goodreads is. I never heard of it.
The last romance novel that you read.
Oh no, come back. I last read. Oh no, I'm gonna have to look. No, this is rapid fire. Oh no, I'm not rapid enough. So here's the thing. I like ha tried not to read that many romance novels while I was writing. So I just sort of getting back to reading romance again. And so, oh God.
It's cool. We
Oh,
can come back.
no, wait, no. I think the last thing I read truly, because I pulled off my shelf after waiting, was The Fastest Way to Fall. What, 'cause I was catching up on all the things I piled up to read during my, and then I was like, okay, once I'm done writing, I can start reading other people's books again. And that was my mentor's book, Denise Williams.
Yes,
It's also great.
it is good. Your favorite word to use in your writing?
Favorite word that I should use, or favorite word I should that I have to go back and take out?
Or
Because I use just like it's currency. But my favorite word I would say is do I like ever? Is it incidentally? No, that's not. That's just a word. That's just a I know. I'm so in love with words. I was like, I can tell you all about how much I love the M dash, but I'm struggling to think of a single word.
you like to use M dashes.
Oh my God, yes. I love that break in the breaking sentences like that.
Yes. Okay, I'll accept that as an answer.
Okay.
If your book became a movie, who would you want to play the lead?
Okay, I finally I have been str I don't know why it doesn't hit me before because I've been like, I don't know, there's so many. Amber Riley is Maya.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
I was looking at it the other day, like, how did I not see it before? Amber Riley is Maya. And Amber, if you're out there, I have a project for you. Have your people call my people.
Well, what about Ant?
Okay, so, and you're gonna have to stay with me.
Okay.
All right. Have you heard of Dimension 20 or Dropout TV or any of those kind of things?
No.
It's like, okay. So there is this comedian, actor guy. His name is Lou. I forget his last name, but he's on. You look up Lou in Dimension 20. He is Ant, and he play Dimension 20 are these live role playing games. It's like Dungeons and Dragons, where they make up different ones, different scenarios. There's one at a high school. There's one that's it's called A Court of Fae and Flowers. It's like a magical Jane Austen situation, and it's all role playing games. They sit around and they play these role playing games live, and they have these characters. And Lou is a beautiful teddy bear of a man who has so much charisma and confidence, and cool dreadlocks and I'm sorry, not dread, cool locks and just the best sense of humor. And I have to look up his last name.
Oh, I see him, Lou Wilson.
Lou Wilson, yes. He is Ant. If you see, like,
I see
he's
it.
100, yeah.
Yeah, I totally see it. He's cute.
Yeah.
He's tall. He's chubby. He has locks. Yeah, I see it. I de oh, that's a good one. That's
He's
very good.
got, like, great, like, second theater lead energy. He's, you know, he's not retiring. He's lots of fun, but he's not that overbearing kind of masculinity. He's got a very warm presence. I don't know.
Yeah, I
You know,
like it.
again,
I like
Lou, have your people call my people, and then Amber Riley's
that.
people, because you guys are probably closer in.
So, when it's all said and done, well, before that question, where do you see romance novels going in the next like decade? Where would you like to see them go in the next decade?
I mean, I would like to see more voices get included. I feel like we just started, you know, getting more Black authors, more Latino authors, more Rainbow Family authors getting to write their own stories for a while. And then, you know, the thing is not to have a wave be a trend, but to have a wave be followed by other waves and roll back into the ocean and become like a deep well of beautiful and interesting stories coming and coming and coming till there were, like, we see love stories of every kind, and then those, like, different kinds of love stories getting made into movies, and people realizing that there's only so many times you could see a robot punch another robot before it's an interesting thing, but you could see people fall in love so many different ways, and it's still
Yes.
interesting.
Yes, absolutely.
So I hope the romance genre allows itself to grow in different and beautiful ways and be as interesting as its writers and readers are.
So finally, when it's all said and done, and you've written like 50 more books and had your books turn into movies and all that, what do you want readers to say about the books that you've written?
I hope we are say that I help them see themselves and help them see themselves worthy of love. If a book
Gotcha.
can do that, then I've done everything possible.
Yes. And a lot of people are going to definitely see themselves in this book, in Maya and in Ants and in all the other characters in her own happiness. So what is next for Eden? What are you doing next? What's coming down the pipeline?
Well, I'm going to be at a PolyCon in April.
Okay.
I'm not sure when this is, but it's my first big convention.
Nice.
So I'm excited about that. And I'm going to be on a panel. I'm not sure. I have to make sure I'm allowed to say that. But I will check out that and get back to you. But I'm excited about a PolyCon. And now I am trying to find my next story, and I'm have a different pitch bouncing off my head every day. So I accidentally pitched someone in the comments of her TikTok about Io Debris and Paul Mescal. And like someone like write the screenplay. I was like, yeah, they'd be a cute rom-com about the Io's a sister, an influencer. She's gonna pretend to be her sister because her sister has COVID, and he's a grumpy tour guide. And I was like, oh no, did I just make up a plot that I now have to write? So
Yes, you have to write it now. Yes, you definitely have to write it. So, where can we find you on social media, and where can we pick up this lovely book?
well, I'm everywhere as Eden A. Writes, because IBQ writes via very long hashtag, including my website. My website's Eden A. Writes. I'm on TikTok, Facebook, Blue Sky, the nice Twitter, and Instagram. And wait, sorry, what's the second question?
Where can we find you on social media, and where
Oh
can we get your book?
yeah, where can my book? My book. My imprint is Amazon, so it's okay if you buy me on Amazon. My books on Amazon, they're in every format: print, audiobook, Kindle, Kindle Unlimited, and this gorgeous paperback. Both of my books have beautiful covers by
Yes, the
Black
covers are
illustrators
gorgeous.
that I'm so grateful every day that my editor fought for those. And also, if you have your you can request them from your local indie. You can request about your local library. I also love that. As a librarian, I love seeing spine labels in my book. You can request them for Libby. You can I think only the Bennett woman is available on Libro FM, but hey, request it there too and see what happens.
Yeah, and Her Own Happiness is also on Kindle Unlimited, and if you have Kindle Unlimited, you also have access to the audiobook, so you can also listen to the audiobook too.
The audiobook is so good, y'all. I struggle
It
to
is
brag about
good.
myself, but the audiobook is amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. The narrator is wonderful. She's great. Yeah, because I started reading the paperback, and then I had to go to work, unfortunately. So today I finished it. I had to put in, switch to the audiobook, which I love, because if you stop reading on the, because I was reading on the iPad actually. So if you stop reading on iPad, then because I couldn't carry the physical book with me, I read in all formats, child. Like when I'm in. I read like the paperback, then I stop, then I read the ebook, then I stop, and then I listen to the audiobook. I'm a mess. But yeah, I couldn't finish it, and so I said, let me switch to the audiobook, and I switched to the audiobook on my commute to work, and I was like, oh, okay, sweet. So it was
Oh, that's
really,
very cool. That's
yeah,
a
it was
thing I've
really
learned
cool.
today.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Yeah. So thank you so much, Eden, for coming on. I really enjoyed talking to you. This was amazing.
It was my absolute pleasure.
I wish you so much success. And like I said, Her Own Happiness was one of my favorite books of this year, for real.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, you guys, we are back. I hope you all enjoyed that interview with Eden Apiakubi. You can find all her social media on Eden A. Writes, and that's pretty much where she is all over the internet. So TikTok, Instagram, her website is Eden A. Writes. So, Yukini, do you watch anything in the watching romance segment? Did you watch anything? I watched a couple things, so
I didn't really
yeah.
watch anything of quality or value that's worth discussing. I watched a few kind of comedic, I guess, sketch movies of the some hot topics in the media. We talked about, this no, I was gonna say playwright, but this director who writes movies or directs and, has movies based on some things going on, like the Who the F Did I Marry Reese Atisa story. He did a movie called The Woman Who, I forgot what it was called, who didn't know who her husband was or whatever. So he does
Yeah,
movies like
who didn't know who
that,
she married.
like basically Tubi slash Prime movies. So yeah, I watched a few of those, and they were pretty funny. Another one was The Nurse Who Saw the Baby on the Side of the Road. That's on Amazon Prime. Oh my God, it opened up with a good sex scene though. I wasn't expecting that. So as I was watching, I was kind of like, not able to really attend to it because I'm like looking back and forth at my door to make sure my kids don't come in because it
Right.
was just like intense and long. It went on for a while. It was like, it was so good. This girl was like all thick and stuff in this lingerie.
I'm okay. I'm gonna have a
Her
look.
up. Yeah, it's just like the first 5 minutes. Like, oh, but anyways, it was, these movies are so silly. And that's kind of, I don't think I watch anything seriously. Yeah. What about you? What'd you
I
watch?
watched American Fiction, which is based on the book Erasure by Percival Everett, and it was so good. I can see why Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown were nominated for Oscars because they were excellent in this movie, like so good. The ending, they kind of changed it up from the book because the book kind of leaves you hanging, like you don't know what happens. Spoiler alert if anybody reads the book, but the book, the movie kind of leaves you hanging too, and it's like an ambiguous ending, but still there are different things that scenarios that kind of play out, and I thought it was really, really good. Sterling K. Brown plays a gay man. It was the first time I ever seen him play a gay man. But he is so Jesus. Ryan Michelle Bethea, girl, you are a lucky woman because that man
Isn't
is
he so handsome?
fine.
Oh, he really is.
He
He's just
is
so handsome.
fine.
Classically just
He's
handsome.
classically handsome and beautiful and like
He
the
is.
deep dark chocolate skin and the
He's
muscles.
gorgeous.
Oh
What's his height
God,
in
it was
real life?
too
I hope he's
much.
not like 5'6". I would feel so
No, he's
disillusioned.
pretty tall. He got some paint on him because Jeffrey Wright is short, so he
Okay.
was tall in the movie. He was towering over Jeffrey.
Okay.
And so Erica Alexander's in the movie too.
Oh, okay.
Leslie Uggams. It's an amazing cast. Issa Rae, an amazing cast.
Issa Rae's in it. Nice.
Tracee Ellis Ross is in it for like a little
Oh.
bit, but it's such a good movie.
It's a drama or like
It's a
a
drama. It's a
dramedy?
satire.
Okay.
It's a satirical drama.
Because when you said Issa Rae and Tracee Ellis Ross, they can be
But
dramatic
they're
actresses,
doing,
but
kind of dramatic turns here.
I see.
So, but
Good
it
for
was
them.
really, really good. But I did watch a romance. It's called Past Lives, also nominated for an Oscar. And when I tell you, y'all, I boo-hooed and cried so bad in that movie. It's Korean. The two characters are Korean, and as children, they loved each other, like deeply loved each other, until one girl immigrates to the United States and leaves him behind, leaves the little boy behind that she loved. And she goes and she has this Americanized life. She gets an American name, she marries a white guy, and all this stuff. And then they look up each other, they find each other on like 15 years later on Facebook or something. And they reconnect, and then they start to like form a relationship. Well, prior to that, they reconnect, and this is way before she gets married, and it's like 15 years later. And then another 15 years passes, and then he's like, I'm in America. I just happen to be in America. I want to see you. And the stuff that he says to her in Korean, like there is no sex in this movie. There's no kissing. There's not barely even any hand holding. But when I tell you I was weeping at the end of that
Oh,
movie, like
Jesus.
I mean, oh, it was so well acted. Like just like the facial expressions and like the pauses of like dialogue and stuff like that. That's how I feel about Moonlight. Like Moonlight doesn't have all this dialogue, right? If you take all of the dialogue of Moonlight, it probably can fit in on one page. But it's so well acted that you don't think about the dialogue. But this movie is the same way. It was just beautiful. It was a beautiful love
How
story.
beautiful the way you
Like I was
described
weeping at the end. It was
it.
so good.
Oh.
But yeah, that's all I watched. I also watched this crazy ass Lifetime movie called Secrets of the University. And when
How
I
was
tell
that?
you that movie was crazy, girl, it was about this black lady who was like this admissions officer at this elite university, like a Harvard or something. And this political family wants to get the son in, but he kind of found out he plagiarized his essay or something.
Oh,
And he
wow.
had a girlfriend who's also black, who's really, really smart and stuff. And he basically used her to get into this university or whatever, whatever. And it was crazy. And then the little black girl was like, "You see how they treat us, as being black or women are inferior and blah, blah, blah." I was like, whoa. But it was interesting. He hit on some hot topics. some good topics, but you know, the acting was all off the chain. You know how
Yeah.
Lifetime is, in the last 5 minutes, they're gonna resolve the mute movie in 5 minutes. But I'm like, okay,
With the
it
fight
was
scene or
good.
whatever.
It was
Yeah.
good. It was a lot of murder and mayhem, but it was still good.
Yeah.
I think there's gonna
I
be a part two. I definitely think
love
there's a
that
part.
when they keep it open for a part two.
Oh my God, just like single black
Oh
female.
gosh. But part three,
I think
yeah.
there's definitely gonna be a part three for
All I
sure.
ask is that we don't have to wait another 2 years, three,
I
yeah, 2 years
know.
for it, because
I
that would be
know.
frustrating. They
I know.
clearly left it open for a three, because honestly, after the one, I did not expect it to. The door was open, but it ended with enough closure that it was a pleasant surprise when we found out there was going to be a two. But this one was clearly a setup for a three. So let's just keep them coming, honey.
I
Keep them.
know, I know.
Yeah.
Three is gonna be very good. I think
Yeah, it
Homegirl gonna
is.
get her revenge
It
for sure. For
is.
sure. Yeah, but in reading romance, I haven't really read much. The only thing that I've been doing, like I said, is my Beverly Jenkins rereads. And this week I am on Topaz, by Beverly Jenkins, about a woman who is a reporter, whose father hires a man to like come and find her so she can get married, but he like falls for her and stuff out there in the wild in the West, and it's very good. It's very good. And then I also listened, also I also listened to a book called Face Down Fridays. Just imagine what that's about.
Face Down Fridays.
And when I tell you this, it's on Audible. So if you have an Audible Plus membership, it's free. But Sean Crisden narrates it, and when I say his voice is so deep and so sexy, I was just like, oh God, I don't know if I can listen to this. Like, this is a lot. But it's really, really good. It's a very, very short read. But what I don't like about Audible, and this is a complaint, there are so many books on there that have AI voices. I'm just
Oh,
like,
like the voice that is like Siri or your navigation in the car?
actually, it sounds a lot more realistic and conversational,
Okay, well, that's good.
but the thing is, it's AI, and it pisses me off. I'm like, you don't want to pay people to like narrate these books?
Yeah, that might be what's happening. Computers taking over. What a
Yeah, and
shame.
it's crazy because
What a
having
shame.
AI is just, it's been running rampant in book spaces, like
You can
AI
tell when you
covers.
hear it or it'll say.
You can tell when you hear it because there aren't the natural pauses and breaks in the breath when
What
people
a
are
shame.
talking.
Yeah.
And then like AI is everywhere. AI covers, AI voices. They're even afraid that AI is gonna actually write a book one day. And people are gonna be reading this AI book.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
it's crazy. It's
Yeah,
really,
AI
really
is taking
crazy.
over.
Yeah. Oh, and also shout out to Kennedy Ryan. She is the one of the first, well, the latest Black author to be a New York Times bestseller. We haven't had
Oh,
a
nice.
Black woman romance writer, romance book on the New York Times bestseller in like 4 years. So congrats
Wow.
to her for This Could Be Us. So
Yeah.
yeah, congrats to her for that.
Amazing.
Yeah. But that's it, you guys. I don't have anything else to say. We'll see you all next time in the next couple weeks after you, Kenny, and I
Yes.
both celebrate our birthdays.
I was gonna say, will it be after our, will we be 45-year-old women during the
Yeah,
next podcast? We're
we
young girls now,
will
44-year-old.
be. We, I mean,
Okay.
I think I will be. I don't think you will be yet,
Oh, I'm
but
still
we'll
gonna be a
see.
baby.
We'll
Okay.
see. So yeah,
We'll see.
we'll hit our prime soon.
Yes. Oh,
Oh, Lord. All right, you guys. You take care, and we'll see you all next week.
bye, guys. Stay safe.